So you wanted to get the PowerPoint going?
PowerPoint, yeah, I can do that.
Sorry.
You got it up?
Yes, should be good. I don't know if that's on.
It should be.
Okay. Okay, cool. Thank you. All right. Well, I hate to break up conversation, but we need to get going. Got a couple of chapters to cover. We're going to do the second part of Samson, the last judge of this book. There's actually a couple more, right? In 1 Samuel, Eli and Samuel are also judges. But I thought, kind of by way of review, we would look at the kind of downward spiral of the judges. We've seen it in Israel, and we'll see even more so tonight, even with the tribe of Judah. But if you think about, and I just kind of highlighted the judges that we know the most about, that we kind of are told more of a story than maybe like Shamgar or Tola or Jair. So Ehud, says he was, most translations, he was a left-handed man, which is probably exactly right, but the text says he was deficient in the right hand, which probably meant he was left-handed, right? That's logical enough. But maybe the idea there is that God used someone who was deficient, and he gained a great victory for the Lord, and it was through his victory that they ended up with 80 years of peace. So we start off well. You could maybe add Othniel to that list, but we don't know too much about him. And then we kind of see a decline. Barak, I would say, is really the true judge instead of Deborah. At least he was the deliverer of the people. You have in him a good man. In Hebrews 11, his faith is exemplified. But you have him saying, I'll go if you go with me. Maybe not the greatest faith in saying, if God calls me to do this, I'm going to do it. So he needed help from Deborah, but was willing to face those iron chariots, if you remember that. Next one is Gideon, who started off well, but did not end very well. If you remember kind of the end part of his life, he started calling his son, my father, the king, Abimelech, and really said all the right things. Like, no, the Lord is the one that's delivered you, and he's your king, not me, but he sure acted like a king at the end of his life. And then we have Jephthah, who made that foolish vow, and then started taking revenge, right? Against those cities that were not willing to help him finish off the enemy. And so after destroying the enemy, he comes back and just destroys those towns. So we're seeing hopefully the decline. And then this is my summation of Samson. He is extremely selfish, and we see him doing whatever he wants to do. Remember last time, he saw a woman and told his parents, she looks good to me and I want her. And the parents kind of, well, if that's what you want, son, then I guess that's what we should do for you. So you have that, and then just kind of breaking just about every way to be a Nazarite, even though God told him, you are a lifelong Nazarite. You see him going through the vineyards and killing and all the things that a Nazarite should be. Samson is not. So I just wanted to kind of notice there with you in the stories that are most told us of the judge, we just see that downward spiral of even the judges. And if Samson was bad in chapter 14, he's just going to get worse in 15 and 16. So Samson is a really good character to learn what not to do. as most of this book is, but certainly a lot of good lessons for us. I thought we would do kind of the same idea or same thing that we did last week, is we'll just kind of go through the story, chapter, and then we'll hit some highlight, hit some application points at the end of that chapter, and then hit chapter 16 and do the same thing. So time's going to get away from us quickly because there's a lot to cover. So let's look at chapter 15 and remember how chapter 14 ended, that he was on his way to get married, and he was hosting this, this party. And he came up with this riddle that no one could ever figure out, and yet his fiance, /wife, kind of got it out of him, badgered him enough that he finally said, this is the answer to the riddle, and the...
She was threatened.
Okay, that's a good point. She was threatened that, or what was the threat?
To kill her family.
Yes. So if you do not give us the riddle, we're going to burn you and your father's house, which meant father's household. So with that threat that she knew they were very serious about, she's going to do whatever she can to get it out of him. She does. And then Samson owes these 30 men a change of clothes. So he goes out and kills 30 Philistines, and this kind of runs off, says, I'm done. So at the end of that chapter, while Samson is gone, what happens to his fiance? Verse 20.
She is given to his
Okay, so his father-in-law, or I guess would-be father-in-law, almost father-in-law, just kind of decides that, well, we're probably not going to see Samson again, so we'll just go ahead and give my daughter to one of the 30 men, and that's what he does. So that's kind of where we're picking up, and throughout this story, we see God using Samson to do what? What's kind of Samson's role? Or God's role for Samson in all this?
Persecute the Philistines.
Okay, so to get the Philistines, and I don't know if I pointed this out, but it says that Samson began to deliver Israel from the Philistines, which again is kind of a, like, man, that's a downgrade, because all the other judges were able to fully deliver Israel, right, from the enemy, but Samson just kind of began to do that. So we have that going on, and so in verse 1, some time has passed, and Samson goes back to get his wife, and the father says, well, I gave her to your companion because I thought you hated her. He had quickly given up on Samson. And what's his offer? Yeah, and what does he say so complimentary about his younger daughter? Yeah, she's even more pretty than the one that you were going to have. Which maybe would appeal to Samson, right? He's like, ooh, that one's pretty, get her for me. He's like, well, this one's even more pretty. So maybe appealing to that. Samson's threat there in verse 4, this time I shall be blameless in regard to the Philistines when I do them harm. What do you think of that statement? This time I'm going to be blameless when I wipe him out.
Sounds like he's justifying himself.
Okay, good. He's certainly justifying himself. What do you think about the idea of this time? Yes, Rachel.
The NIV says, I have a right to get even.
Okay.
So he's kind of like saying, well, since they did this to me, I can get away and punish them.
Yeah, absolutely, yes. So I am justified in my revenge, and isn't that how it always is? For the someone who is taking revenge, they feel like, well, since they did this to me, I'm fully justified in doing this to them. We're going to look at this, one of the application points, but let's let God handle the revenge and not ourselves. But we see Samson, and I what do you think of this time I shall be blameless? Does that imply something about the last time? Oh, maybe he is admitting, last time I wasn't really... Yeah, and so maybe I wasn't really blameless in that one, but this time I am blameless, right? So even maybe he would admit that that wasn't the best thing to do with the 30 companions. So what does Samson do to get his, in his mind, justified revenge against these Philistines for losing his wife?
Catches a whole bunch of thoughts.
Okay, yeah. Wow. That's amazing, right? 300 foxes, pairing them up, and maybe ties their tails together with a torch in the middle, and that's going to scare the foxes. Seems like the foxes would run, I don't know, run an opposite, or maybe they just run trying to get away from the fire, and what happens because of that? Yeah, all the food, all that work of growing crops, and all you gardeners out there can probably relate. Oh man, what a devastated thing this must have been. All that food supply is now gone. But you see again God using Samson's anger and revengeful attitude to get back at the Philistines. And I think we made this point last week, is the fact that God uses Samson, does that mean Samson is in the right? I think sometimes we can have that idea that we can say, well, God is using me. And we say, well, therefore, I'm doing what's right. Well, God used a donkey, right? God used Balaam. If there was ever a bad guy, Nebuchadnezzar, Cyrus, you know, so God uses all sorts of people. And we see God using maybe the not greatest attribute of Samson yet for his purpose. And I think that's what we're supposed to see here in Samson's life. So what happens as a result of all of this devastation of the crops in verse 6? What do you see happening? Yeah, okay, so verse 6, and the people, who did this? And they said, Samson, the son-in-law of the Timnite, because he took his wife and gave her to his companion. So the Philistines came up and burned her and her father with fire.
Which is what they were threatening.
Correct.
When Samson gave her.
That's what she was trying to avoid this whole time, is to getting burned. And why are they killing her and her father and not Samson? Seems like if Samson did this, seems like he would be a good one to burn instead of these two. Yeah, I think these two are a little bit easier to handle than Samson would be. So they kind of take out their anger on the ones that did this thing that caused Samson to take revenge. So unfortunately, she gets the death that she was threatened with back in chapter 14. So then, what happens next? You can kind of see this pattern, right? I hope. What happens in verse 7 and 8?
More revenge.
Absolutely. So you see this kind of domino effect here in this chapter. Because they did this, I'm justified in doing this. And because he did that, we're justified in burning. Well, because they burn, then I'm going to, you know. So it's just kind of domino effect. So Samson hears what they did. Samson, I don't know what I just said. Samson hears what they just did and struck them ruthlessly with a great slaughter. And then after this great slaughter, he lived in the cleft of the rock of Edom. So this is kind of the first part of this, where Samson kind of feels justified, and then it's just domino effect about, well, since he did this to me, I'm going to get back at him. Any thoughts or questions kind of through verse 8? Anything that I skipped over that you think I shouldn't have? Correct. Yeah, just, yeah, good point. Correct. All right, so look at starting in verse 9. The Philistines surround the city of Lehi. And again, what do you see the Philistines doing here?
Raiding.
Raiding, yes. Who do they not want to handle? Samson. So what's their strategy this time? Yes. So if you don't deliver us Samson, then we're going to devastate you. Verse 11, this is really interesting and sad. Then 3,000 men of Judah went down to the cleft of the rock of Edom and said to Samson, "Do you not know that the Philistines are rulers over us? What then is this that you have done to us?" And he said to them, "As they did to me, so I have done to them." They said, "Well, we have come down to bind you so that we may give you into the hand of the Philistines." And Samson said to them, "Swear to me that you will not kill me." They said to him, "No, but we will bind you fast and give you into their hands, yet surely we will not kill you." Then they bound him with two new ropes and brought him up from the rock. Do you remember last week the cycle of the judges and which aspect of that cycle is missing in this story?
The people crying out.
People crying out to the Lord. What do you see in these verses that kind of indicates they did not cry out to the Lord?
They came to Samson.
They're willing to give Samson over.
Instead of calling for God for someone to deliver us, what are they doing?
Send 3,000 people to go get him.
Yeah, and they're delivering their deliverer to the Philistines. So, Samson, you're messing things up. You are going to get the Philistines angry at us. We're fine. Don't you know that they are ruling over us? You're going to mess this all up. So they are delivering God's deliverer to the enemy nation that God is using him to destroy. You just see that the downgrade of Israel. And what tribe is doing this?
Judah.
What do we know about Judah, looking at chapter 1? Good or bad? Yeah, they were the best tribe. And chapter 1, they did a lot of good. But you just kind of see, man, when we get to chapter 15, even Judah is just gone downhill. So you kind of see that here. So really interesting. And Samson's reply is, "I'll go, just don't kill me. Swear to me that you will not kill me." And the topic of this chapter. As they did to me, so I have done to them. I would say this is Samson's motto for his life. Whatever they do to me, I am justified in doing that back to them. So Samson does nothing to calm them down or to help them trust in God, but simply defends his actions by saying, well, they started it, and I'll finish it, is kind of the idea. So that's what happens. They deliver Samson to the Philistines. And then verses 14 and 15, when he came to Lehi, the Philistines shouted as they met him, and the Spirit of the Lord came upon him mightily, so that the ropes that were in his arms were as flax that is burned with fire, and his bonds dropped from his hands, and he found a fresh jawbone of a donkey. So he reached out and took it and killed 1,000 men with it. You see, again, God's deliverance of his people, a delivering, beginning to deliver the Philistines from him. And what do you think of Samson's poem here in verse 16? What stands out to you with what Samson says here? A lot of eyes in there, yes. Really giving all the credit to himself, right? And look what I have done. Look what I am able to do. So really comes up with a poem praising himself instead of, this is what the Lord has given me the ability to do. He names the town Ramoth Lehi, which I believe, let's see, where are my notes? Say what that means. I had it, then I lost it. Does anyone know what that means as I'm trying to find it? Okay, yeah, height of the jawbone. So kind of names this place after his big victory of what he was able to do with the jawbone of a donkey. Who's that kind of remind you of in Judges? Able to kill a bunch of Philistines with a kind of an interesting object. Shamgar, right? Did it with an ox goad. Killed 300. I guess you can kill 700 more with the jawbone of a donkey. So after this great victory, we have verse 18. Then he became very thirsty, and he called to the Lord and said, "You have given this great deliverance by the hand of your servant, and now shall I die of thirst and fall into the hand of the uncircumcised?" But God split the hollow place that is in Lehi, so that water came out of it. When he drank, his strength returned and he revived. Therefore, he named it that place in Hakor, which is in Lehi to this day. So he judged Israel 20 years in the days of the Philistines. What do you see from the very first time that's recorded from Samson here in verse 18? It took him almost two full chapters to inquire of the Lord, but he finally did it. What do you think of this event? So he gives a great victory, gives praises to himself, and then he finally learns that, well, maybe I do need the Lord. I'm thirsty, and if I don't have anything to drink, then I'm going to die. And he basically gives God the credit, but then says, now shall I die of thirst and fall in the hands of the uncircumcised? Do you really want to kill me, Lord? I just have a hard time believing that this is a true transition point in Samson's life. It seemed like to me that he needed something from the Lord at this very moment. The Lord blessed him with it. Now he's back to his normal self, as we'll see in chapter 16. Any thoughts kind of there through chapter 15?
Well, isn't it kind of typical that he realizes that he couldn't kill this many people with a box? That he realizes God has brought me to a point, but then he says, well, I'm not happy. And we do that.
Sure.
God gives us everything. We are so blessed, but then we're not happy.
Yeah. Good point. Here's the three application points that I thought about in this chapter. See, especially that first part of this chapter is the idea of revenge. And it seems like it just keeps happening. It's never, revenge is something that you can never fill up. So he's always taking things into his own hands, and because they did this to me, I'm going to do this to them. In Romans chapter 12, verse 19, never take your own revenge, beloved, but leave room for the wrath of God. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay. Later on in that chapter, do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. That's easier said than done, right? When someone has not been nice to you, and man, you want to teach them a lesson, kind of get them, say that's not nice what you did, but we just have to let God do that. That's not our business. You see the idea of don't be slaves to sin. What I got from that, the children of Israel were so detached from God, they were content with being slaves to the Philistines. It's like, why are you trying to deliver us, Samson? We're fine. We're fine with how things are. And sometimes that can get us as well, that we can become content with some of the sins in our life and say, well, it's just kind of how it is, and I've just learned to deal with it. We need to get rid of anything that is stopping us from serving the Lord. Romans chapter 6 in verse 16 says, Do you not know that when you present yourselves to someone as slaves for obedience, you are slaves of the one whom you obey, either of sin resulting in death or of obedience resulting in righteousness. But thanks be to God that though you were slaves of sin, you became obedient from the heart to that form of teaching to which you were committed. And having been freed from sin, you became slaves of righteousness. So we can either be slaves of righteousness or slaves of sin. And it seems to me Israel was very content being slaves to the Philistines. And beware of pride. You can always kind of make this point just about in every story in the Bible. But Samson's pretty prideful about what he could do with the might that God gave him, making a riddle out of his victory over a young lion, naming a place after his great victory over the Philistines with a jawbone, and then naming another place after he successfully called on the Lord. Because I called on the Lord and he helped me, I'm going to name this place that. There's always a temptation to give glory for yourself. Let others know how great you are. Samson was real good at that. A good model. Samson's what not to do. I'd say Daniel is a good one, what to do. Daniel chapter 2, verse 21, Daniel gave God the credit for making him so wise. It was you, Lord, who gave us the wisdom. Daniel makes sure Nebuchadnezzar understands it is God who understands the dreams. It's nothing that I did. And also in chapter 2, verse 49 of Daniel, after being promoted, Daniel promotes his three friends who did the same thing that he did, and that was pray to the Lord. Be like the Apostle Paul. Look what the Lord has done. Look how the Lord has opened up doors for me to spread the gospel. Always give credit to the Lord. And that's not what we're seeing here from Samson. Anything else jump out at you in the chapter 15? We have 15 minutes, but I wanted to get your input.
I was just going to make one point about the first part. What we don't know is how God could have used him had he been different. If he had been good and humble and leader, we had no idea what that was about.
Right. Yes.
So was Samson right in his mindset? No, but God would use him as a tool, as an instrument to deliver judgment. So there's a lot of unknowns there. What might have happened?
Sure.
Had he been somebody with a different mindset? So it's sort of dual-edged. Less America, God was getting vengeance.
Yes.
Through him. But he was going out of his armor. So it's sort of a cash to receive.
Yes, yes. Certainly, you see, God is in control, and he can use even someone like Samson for his will.
I don't question at all this bad stuff that Samson did. I mean, it's obvious. It's in the text.
Right.
Where I have trouble, what I have trouble understanding is when we get to Hebrews 11, and he's in that list, verse 39 says, all these were approved through their faith. Now, Samson was approved through his faith. How?
Yeah, that's a great question. We're not seeing much faith out of Samson here.
It's there. I mean, we know it's there, but
I wonder, and what I always jump to on that, I could be wrong, was I jumped to the very end of his life when he finally, trusting the Lord, said, Lord, just give me this one last time. I know it's not the hair. It's you who's doing this. And give me the strength this one last time.
But even then, he said, I want to do it for vengeance because they put my eyes out. So he's still all about the vengeance, and it's personal vengeance. He doesn't express anything about the Lord. And yet, I mean, I thought the Lord granted that wish. So I don't see that he came back to do anything any differently.
Yeah.
Well, I think Melinda makes a great point that should give us all hope. That we read a lot of bad stuff that Samson did, and in the end, God still said he was approved. I'm not saying that doesn't mean we should live righteously and that we should look to Samson as like a pivotal person that we should try to be like. But when we see people in Scripture that we know sin in major ways, and maybe for long periods of time, and then we also know that the Bible tells us that they, in the end, God counted them as righteous. And generally, we're told that they're counted as righteous because of their faith. We should take great hope in that. And in Hebrews 11, you see that laid out really clearly in the fact that every single person mentioned, I believe, except for Joseph, we know of at least one significant sin in their life from Hebrews 11. I think it's important to the message of the Bible to understand that flawed people can be saved.
Good. I'll just leave it there. And we will try to finish chapter 16 in about 10 minutes. So, what do you notice at the end of chapter 15? So he judged Israel 20 years in the days of the Philistines. That's normally what? Kind of the end of the judge, right? Then we move on to, I guess in Gideon's case, his son Abimelech. But normally go on to another judge. Usually that's the end of the story. Unfortunately, there's more in Samson's case. And we kind of see his even more decline. So Samson goes to Gaza and again goes into enemy territory to one of their five major cities. And what do you see him doing? Kind of fulfilling his fleshly desires with a harlot. So again, you see Samson always seems to want to do whatever he wants to do. Very impulsive. He gets mad, so he kills 30 Philistines. He gets mad again, so he sets the Philistines' grain on fire. Then he avenges 1,000 Philistines for trying to capture him. So again, we kind of see the impulsive nature of this judge. So the Gazites, here he is in town and plan on killing their enemy. Then in verse 3, Samson escapes with what?
The gate.
Yeah, with the door to the city. And what do we know about that door? What can you imagine about that door of Gaza? Big? Super heavy, right? So that's going to have to withstand an army trying to attack and get through. It's an extremely heavy gate.
It wasn't just that, though. He carried that gate uphill 36 miles.
Yeah. It's hard to just walk, for me, 36 miles, to yet carry anything. So again, you see God using that to the defeat of the Philistines. And then some time passes, and here we kind of see the end, the fall of Samson. So Samson, again, falls in love with falls in love with a Philistine woman. This one, we have her name, whose name was Delilah. So what number is this, if you're keeping track of the Philistine women of Samson? Three, right? The almost wife, and then the harlot, and now this one. The Philistines, what are they, what's their deal with Delilah? Or how did, if that makes sense, what's their deal? What's their deal with Delilah? Bad asking. What's that? Yeah. And I think by this point, the Philistines know Samson's weakness. Philistine women. And so they believe that Samson has something that makes him so strong. And so what do they promise her? This is major.
1,100.
Okay, almost right. 1,100. I think it's more than that. Yes.
From each of the lords.
Sorry.
Each.
So how much total?
137 pounds.
Okay. That's amazing. There's five of them, right? So 5,500. That kind of lets you know the wealth of the Philistines, how powerful they are. What else does it tell you?
Well, they learned their lesson from the previous chapter.
Okay.
That threatening doesn't work.
Yes. Tells you how much they want to get rid of Samson, right? This guy is a menace. We're willing to pay, you know, a lot of money just to get rid of this guy. So you figure out how in the world he's so strong, and we'll give you all this money. What's Delilah's first attempt in 6 through 9? Well, I guess I'm asking, what does Samson tell her? What's the secret?
Fresh
bones, yeah, if you wrap me up with fresh, then that's just, I'll be weak. I'll be like any other man. Delilah tries it out, like any good woman would do, right? That came out really bad. Detract that from the recording, anything. This wicked woman, that sounds exactly right, what she would do. So, the Philistines are upon you, Samson, and what happens? It just breaks it through, no problem. Do you suppose that Samson really thinks afterwards that the Philistines are there? Or could it be that maybe he thinks Delilah's just trying to trick me and to really see kind of for herself if that worked? I don't know. I just throw that out there. Yes, ma'am.
I kind of always thought that he didn't fully trust her. I mean, he loved her. He wanted her, but he still did not fully trust her. So he chose the weakest cords to bind him that he knows he can break.
Yes. Yeah. So good point. You see a lack of trust for Samson not to give her the true answer. Well, try, you know, if you do this, then that's it. The fact that she goes through with it kind of should let, you know, give Samson a clue, you would think. So that doesn't work. So 10 through 12, Samson's second answer, what does he say?
New ropes.
Yeah, try it with new ropes and then I'll be done. And that doesn't work. And again, you see, okay, let's see if that's it. And then what does he say the third time? Verse 13 and 14.
Who?
She's getting warm, right? Kind of see maybe she's wearing Samson down. Now it's part of the hair. If you do this to my hair, then I won't be able to. Of course, that doesn't work. So then 15 to 22, she does, she really wants that 5,500 pieces of silver. And so she is able to get it out of Samson. And he says, if I am shaved, then my strength will leave me and I will become weak and be like any other man. Again, what do you see this as? Again, a lifelong Nazarite. Just throwing this last one, right? So what do you think is, well, maybe are we being optimistic, saying there is actually something going through Samson's mind? Do you think that Samson believes he'll still have the strength if his hair is shaved off?
I would say yes, but does he know?
I think so too. It's amazing, and I think Samson parallels Israel so much. And when Samson believed that, well, God will still be with me, he'll still give me victory over the Philistines like he has in the past, he didn't even know that God had left him. And that's very similar to Israel, the nation. So Samson and Israel have a lot in common. So they're able to get Samson. Yes, ma'am.
I actually disagree with you.
Okay.
And the reason I disagree with you is because verse 16, he says his soul was vexed to death. Reminds me of Esau. Esau was like, I'm going to die anyway. Take it. It's not worth anything to me.
Yeah.
I think at this point, he's so frustrated and fed up. He's like, I don't even care. Just leave me alone. I just might as well die.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, it's not worth it to listen to you badger me.
Sure. My version there, his soul was annoyed to death. Good point. Certainly could be. So the Philistines finally get Samson, and what do the Philistines do in verse 23 and 24? Who do they give the credit to?
Dagon,
their god. And that's not going to sit well with the true God, right? So you could probably guess what's going to happen. And the Philistines call out for Samson, have this great victory, and we'll kind of show him off. And first of all, you see the Philistines tormenting Samson, getting his eyes out. And it could be said that Samson finally had vision when he was blind. He could finally say, I need the Lord to do this. I can't depend on myself. So you know the rest of the story. He calls out to God in the prayer in verse 28. Maybe some good things about this prayer in verse 28. I know I'm running out of time. Oh Lord, please remember me and please strengthen me just this time, oh God, that I may at once be avenged of the Philistines for my two eyes. I guess it's good that he called for God to help him in distress. It's encouraging to know he could knock down those pillars with God's help. But not so good things that I may at once, or only this once. Kind of reminds you of what Samson said in chapter 15, verse 7. After this, I'll quit. And that I may be avenged on the Philistines for my two eyes. Again, kind of to Belinda's point, the prayer is still, they did this to me, I'm going to do this to them. I didn't really use my time very well this evening, but it's three takeaways real quick. Certainly you see the need for self-control. If Samson lacked anything, it was self-control. And you see the mercy of God, I hope, in this story, where God is even willing to listen to Samson, and that he's able to deliver his people using someone like Samson. So great mercy of God, and we learned that it's not Dagon, it's the great, great God, it's Yahweh. I hate to kind of run through those so quick. Thank you for your good comments, I think next week we will look starting in chapter 18. And I think we're going to look at 18 through 20, or maybe 18 and 19, I can't remember off the top of my head. So at least read those two chapters, and we'll look forward to our study next week. Thank you.